If you can, if you need to submit questions, you can do so in the control panel box that you'd see, and we're going to take questions at the end. All right, let's get started. My name is Sarah Barzak, and I'm the program director for the High Risk Energy Choices Program here at Southern Alliance for Clean Energy. I work out of our Savannah, Georgia office, and I'd like to start out by thanking you for attending today. We are very pleased to connect with you because you make our work possible. This webinar is a great opportunity to share, learn, and participate and ask questions. Today, I'll be providing an overview on the risks we see with expanding nuclear power in the region. I will not cover in depth the individual power plant sites. There's so much material on that front, we'll have to save that for another webinar. I think somebody, or maybe a couple more people, just joined the webinar. If you could please hit *6 to mute your phone. And just a reminder that if you need to submit questions, you can do so in the control panel, and we'll take those questions at the end. I was just providing an introduction. My name is Sarah Barzak. And anyway, getting back to it, we will not cover in depth the individual power plant sites today because there is just so much content there. I think we're going to need to save that for a webinar. And this is going to be more an overview, like I said, of the main risks that we see with expanding nuclear power in the region. And as I've said, in order to get through this, we will take submitted questions at the end. And you can submit those questions at any point. We will just address them at the end. So we should all be looking at the opening slide. It says a risky option expanding nuclear power in the Southeast. I think somebody just joined. Please hit *6 to mute your phone. And you can submit questions, which we will take at the end via the control panel. And my apologies to those who you have been very patient and heard me say this over and over about muting your phone. So let's go ahead. If you'd advance to your next slide. Or I will advance it to the next slide, excuse me. Just one second. There we go. Sorry, there was a little delay there. The next slide should say about us at the top, just to make sure you're with me. This is an overview of Southern Alliance for Clean Energy. We've been working to advocate for clean, responsible energy choices that will improve our communities and our region. And we've been doing that for over 20 years. We started out small, and we've grown substantially. We have now 5 offices across the Southeast. And as I said, I'm down in the Savannah, Georgia office. You can find out more about us at our website at www.cleanenergy.org. And we're going to advance to the next slide.
Claire Kane.
Hi. If you could please hit *6 to mute your phone. Thank you. And we just started, so we're only 2 slides into it. You should be on the slide that at the top says the Southeast Energy Profile. And essentially, this is just a lot of you on the call already know this, but the reality is in the Southeast, we are relying heavily on coal and nuclear power, and those energy supplies are very large water users. Right now, we don't have a lot of electricity generated from renewable energy sources such as solar, wind, and bioenergy. And as most of us know, coal plants are the largest industrial source of carbon dioxide in the country. I think somebody just joined. If you can, we just started the webinar. If you can please hit *6 to mute your phone. As I was saying, coal plants are the largest industrial source of carbon dioxide in the country, and since the Southeast is incredibly reliant on coal, we are contributing heavily to global warming pollution. And this webinar is focusing on nuclear power, so I wanted to highlight that nearly all the Southeastern states have proposals for more nuclear plants, and we're going to talk a little bit more about that in the upcoming slides. If you can advance, or I'll advance to the next slide, a nuclear southeast, just giving you an overview of what it looks like today in the southeast and what is on the horizon. About a quarter of our electricity comes from nuclear. South Carolina is our most nuclear-dependent state. And about a third of the nuclear power reactors in the United States are here in the southeast. Most, if not all, of our region's large utilities, and I've listed some here, Duke and Southern and TVA, hold operating licenses for the nuclear plants in the region. And also, a lot of small utilities in the region have partial ownership in these plants. As an example, Plant Vogtle in Georgia, the majority owner is Georgia Power, which is a subsidiary of Southern Company, but it's also owned in part by Oglethorpe, MEAG, and Dalton Utilities. So even though you may see a name like SCANA, in many cases there are other players that have bought into that power plant. And last, as I mentioned before, I mean, most of the southeastern states are pursuing new nuclear, and nearly all the utilities in the southeast are pursuing new nuclear plants. The next slide. These are just some quick bullet points on just some of the basic impacts that nuclear power has. You know, if you're in an elevator with somebody and they say, well, what are the issues with nuclear power? You can quickly just comment, well, you know, they require large amounts of water in order to operate. They do contribute to thermal pollution of our waterways, meaning the water that they're releasing back to the river or the lake or the stream is hot, much warmer than what the river temperature had been originally. And they do release hazardous chemicals and radioactive contaminants on a daily basis. These are not emission-free facilities, as you often hear proponents claim. The third little radioactive symbol there is probably the one we all have heard about the most, that nuclear power plants create dangerous, long-lived radioactive waste for which we don't have any safe storage yet. And last, probably most notable because of Chernobyl and Three Mile Island and other accidents that have happened, though the risks are small, if there is an accident at a nuclear power plant, land and water resources can be contaminated for long periods of time. Go to the next slide. Now let's talk about what's on the horizon. This is just a list of some of the numbers involved with these new nuclear power plant proposals. The Nuclear Regulatory Commission is the federal agency in charge of licensing new plants. And as of the end of the year, they said that we had 23 new power plant applications that have either been applied for or are going to be, that are in the hopper and will be filed by 2010. Of those applications, that means 34 total new reactors are being proposed. And 16, or almost half of those, are proposed right here in the southeast. Next slide. Okay, you should be looking at a map of the United States. This is from the NRC's webpage, and the resources listed down there at the bottom. Let me remind you that as I go through the webinar, this presentation will be available to you later. So if you don't feel like you need to write down these links or write everything down, because we have limited time to go through this. But this map is on the NRC's website, and it lists all of the new power plant proposals they have, where they are, and what type of power plant they're proposing to build. It's interactive on their website, so if you're interested in the Levy County proposal down in Florida, you can go and click on that, and it'll bring up more information about the plant, so you can get an up-to-date information on each of the plants. So I'd encourage you to do that. As you can see, a lot being proposed here in the southeast, like we discussed. So let's go to the next slide, and we're going to start the bulk of the presentation and why nuclear power is a problem and not a solution. And we've boiled it down to what we call the four W's, just to help you remember it: water, Wall Street, waste, and weapons. I'm going to focus first on water, and I'm actually going to sort of be water intensive in this presentation, because I do have a lot of slides on that, And it's an issue that many of you have expressed interest in, so I wanted to make sure to cover that. When we talk about Wall Street, when we get there, we're talking about cost and scale-up. And then when we get down to weapons, we're talking about security and proliferation. So let's go to the next slide, and we'll talk about water. Most of you know that power plants generally need water in order to produce electricity. And though in many cases a good portion of that water is returned to the lake or the stream or the reservoir, I think somebody just joined. If you want to hit star 6, please, to mute your phone. And we are, as you scroll forward, we just got to the first slide dealing with water. The title says Water Use by the Electricity Sector. Though most of the water is returned to the lake or the reservoir, the stream, wherever the power plant is pulling from, that water is generally being returned at much higher temperatures. That gets back to the thermal pollution I talked about earlier. But some of it is consumed or lost, and that's primarily as evaporative loss during cooling. So when you see the big cooling towers at a nuclear plant and all that steam coming off, that is consumptive water loss. And this can be really significant, especially at nuclear plants, depending on the type of cooling technologies they're going to use. And I think we'll have a webinar in the future about water and energy. So I just want to tell you, I'm skimming some of this down. We can talk a lot about these different cooling technologies, but we're not going to get into that in this presentation. So let's go to the next slide. For those of you who joined a little bit later, the top of your screen should say water intensity for various power generation sources. And if somebody just joined, please hit star 6 to mute your phone. And just scroll through about maybe 10 slides. We're talking about water issues, and you can catch up with us. This is a slide. This is from the U.S. Department of Energy. They submitted a report to Congress on energy and water. And this is a segment of a chart where they gauge the water intensity of all types of energy supplies. And what I pulled out are the more traditional ones that we're familiar with, fossil, coal plants, nuclear, natural gas combined cycle, and coal integrated gasification combined cycle. And the units there are gallons per megawatt hour of electricity. That's the term that they use to define what water intensity is. And I think I heard somebody clear their throat. If they can just please hit star 6 to mute your phone, it just helps with the quality of the sound. Thank you. So looking at this chart, it shows you that nuclear, in terms of withdrawals of water and consumptive use, is the most water intensive. And again, you don't need to write these numbers down. You can have access to this webinar later. That's just confirming for you that nuclear is very water intensive. Now we'll switch to the next slide, which says water consumption rates for electric sources. This is a chart. It's older. It's actually based on some data from the California Energy Commission, because they were studying this water energy connection in California a long time before this became a hot topic in our neck of the woods. And as you can see in this one, this is in gallons per kilowatt hour, which most of us are more familiar with kilowatt hours because that's what our utility bills come in. And again, it shows that trend that nuclear tends to consume or use more water than other energy supply sources and much, much more than renewables, as is mentioned at the bottom of that chart. All right, moving on. So let's look at some real-world examples then. The Duke Energy has proposed to build two reactors at their Lee site in South Carolina. That is a site that has never had an operating nuclear power plant on it. So these are new reactors at essentially a new site. If any of you saw the movie The Abyss, some of the old infrastructure from the original pursuit of the Lee plant was used for that movie. So anyway, they're looking to resurrect that power plant and get it operational by building two new Westinghouse AP1000 reactors, and it would be withdrawing from the Broad River. According to their application to the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, they're going to be pulling about 47 to 81 million gallons of water per day. And the consumptive loss is estimated to be about 50 to 75%. So you're looking at about 35 to 41 million gallons per day being lost, not returned back to the Broad River. And let's go to the next slide to just understand, well, what does that really mean? I mean, what does that mean, that amount of water? Well, in that same application, they talked about that the average surface water use in Cherokee County, where this plant is proposed, is about 8.4 million gallons a day. So, you know, putting that in perspective, this means that on a daily basis, the Lee Nuclear Plant could be using 6 to 10 times the amount of surface water used by every other user in the county combined. So this is a major, if this thing is built and becomes operational, this would be by far the largest water user in that area. Let's go to the next slide. Let's talk about Plant Vogtle. That's one that I'm very familiar with because I live downstream of Plant Vogtle. It is a two-reactor unit near Augusta, and Georgia Power, the subsidiary of Southern Company, along with its utility partners here in Georgia, are proposing, again, to build two Westinghouse AP1000 reactors. They would be pulling from the Savannah River. Their estimates are about 55 to 88 million gallons per day being withdrawn from the river. Again, that same 50 to 75% consumptive loss figure. And putting that in, again, into perspective, what does that mean? Well, it would mean that more water will be lost as steam from the two existing and the two proposed reactors at Plant Vogtle than is currently used by all residents of Atlanta, Augusta, and Savannah combined, or enough water to supply 1.4 to 2.3 million Georgians. I just put those figures together just so we could kind of get a handle on what is that really mean in terms of, you know, comparing to other water users. And let's go to the next one. Let's talk about Bellefonte. This is TVA is also proposing to build two new AP1000 reactors at their never-completed Bellefonte site in Alabama. Now, mind you, they had spent about $4 billion, and that's billion with a B, on the Bellefonte site and abandoned those plans. So now they're wanting to build it, and according to their application, they'd be withdrawing about 71 million gallons a day, consuming about 46, and to put that million gallons per day. And putting that in perspective, similar to the Lee plant, this represents more water consumption than all public water systems in the Gunnersville watershed combined. The Gunnersville watershed is that stretch of the Tennessee River that Bellefonte would be pulling from if it ever was built and comes online. So next slide. You know, why do we care? I mean, why is the water energy connection a big deal? Well, it's because there are competing demands for water. And I highlighted a quote here from a 2004 Department of Energy report that predicted that the West and the Southeast, in order to meet increasing electricity demand, power plants are going to be competing with other users for these limited freshwater supplies. And, you know, in Southern Alliance for Clean Energy's view, when we have these climate change models that are predicting that we are more likely to have drought conditions, you know, what we deem as drought conditions now are going to become potentially a regular theme for us. And with the perspective that we might have these mega droughts, this little water crunch, this competition is going to be exacerbated. And so we need to start making the right choices on what our energy supply sources are going to be. So going to the next slide, that sort of crunch or tightness of water and the competition that's going to happen is potentially going to also bring up energy reliability concerns. And the reality is power plants can be impacted negatively by summer heat waves or droughts. And with some of the global warming predictions that are out there and some of the modeling, this may make the situation worse. I think when this really came to fruition more for folks was in 2006 when there was a severe summer heat wave in Europe and there was a lot of press about power plants, specifically nuclear plants, shutting down in France and Germany and elsewhere because the water temperatures of the streams that the nuclear plants relied on were too high to allow for safe operation. And then it hit home here in the Southeast in August of 2007. I think somebody may have just joined. If you can please hit star 6 to mute your phone. And we are, I want to say, maybe 15 slides into it. The title of the slide I'm on right now says Energy Reliability Concerns. If you want to actually, I keep forgetting you guys aren't forwarding these slides. I am. So you're seeing where we are. So my apologies. Anyway, Browns Ferry, which had just come back online after, about a $1 to $2 billion reinvestment because it had been shut down since 1985, had to shut down in the summer of 2007 because the Tennessee River exceeded 90 degrees at, Fahrenheit over 24 hours. We were having a heat wave, and essentially if Browns Ferry had kept operating, they would have violated the environmental permits that they had because of those high river temperatures. And I just included the quote from the spokesman from TVA when that happened. TVA said, we don't believe we've ever shut down a nuclear unit because of river temperature. Well, you know what? It happened many more times, not only that summer, but this past summer. Browns Ferry shut down numerous times in August of 2008 as well. And a number of other nuclear plants in the region were dealing with very low river levels and other things and were threatened with having to potentially shut down. So we really have to think about the long-term energy reliability of such a water-intensive supply source. So next slide, again, repeating the why is nuclear a problem and not a solution. We covered water. Now we're going to deal with Wall Street and waste. And now some of these slides are going to look kind of complicated, and I'm going to do my best to simplify them. And again, you will have this webinar available to you afterwards, so just don't get caught up in the nitty-gritty of the numbers. This next series of slides all comes out of a report that I'd recommend that you all look up. It's the Keystone Center conducted a nuclear power joint fact-finding report in 2007. And what they were looking at is, what is the role of nuclear power in mitigating climate change? You know, if we use nuclear power as a way to reduce carbon, what is it going to take? What are going to be the challenges, et cetera, et cetera? So what they used to determine the amount of nuclear power that we may need to tackle some of the global warming reductions we need is this stabilization wedge study that came from some professors at Princeton. So you can see the source below that chart. These professors put together a number of wedges which represented a certain amount of carbon, and each wedge was some kind of solution, so to speak, like energy efficiency measures or renewable energy technologies or things like that. And one of them they put forward, one of the 15 options, was potentially to have a nuclear wedge. And they said that we need 7 of these wedges in order to meet to stabilize the atmosphere by 2050. So these next slides are going to go into analyzing, as the Keystone Center report did, if we did one nuclear wedge, what would it take to do that and what would be the challenges. So with the next slide, what they showed is that one wedge would require that we roughly triple the size of global nuclear power plant capacity. So we're approximately at 370 gigawatts, and that would have to go up to over 1,000 gigawatts. So you can see the chart there where it says where we are today, the current, and if you had to do one wedge in that stabilization wedge theory that they have, you'd have to bump up almost triple of what we have today. So on to the next slide. So then what would be required of this? Well, first of all, we've got, you know, about 441 reactors worldwide today, with almost a quarter of those here in the United States. To maintain current worldwide capacity, the industry would need to build 7 to 9 new reactors per year until 2050 to just maintain where we are now. And this is according, again, to the Keystone Center's report. The industry would need to build 20 to 25 new reactors a year worldwide until 2050 to attain one of those seven needed wedges. Here in the U.S., you know, they estimated that would be about 5 to 6 reactors per year in the U.S., so that the U.S. would add about 200-plus new reactors. The cost estimates, as most of you know right now, are in the $6 to $8.5 billion per reactor range, and that's climbing. It's already, you know, been climbing the last couple years when this whole resurgence started.